Ciccelli effect.
I'm a big fan of the show.
Chuck Ocelli, and he's been known for many years as a blind JFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassination, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Kelly!
30th day of August 2019, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the O'Kelly Effect, broadcast live, originating from the facilities of O'Kelly.com, but heard in a variety of other places. So, do appreciate you, no matter where you are, who you are, however it is you're coming to the show, even if it's further on down the stream via your final slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour, or even the GooTube. Welcome to what we're doing here on a Friars Day. So this is going to be a solo show and a bit of experimentation. I'm actually going to just get to a couple of the quick updates on the world around us, just in case you only tuned to my show to get news. And if you do, I'm terribly sorry. I'm really, really sorry. If this is the only source you have for news, I'm terribly sorry. I'm almost like Mike Pompeo, except I'm not going to stop apologizing for America. No, I'm not going to do that. Anyway, very hard for me to maintain that voice. But anyhow, it is going to be an interesting night. And, of course, at 10 p.m. Eastern, we'll go live to the Age of Transitions. And then at 11 p.m. Eastern, live to Uncle the Broadcast, in which case I'll just be the producer. So you can all thank your lucky stars. You won't have to hear my voice too much more. Anyway, we're going to take a look at what's what right now, right? So Madeline there, Trump's assistant, who apparently was the secret to all things, according to certain recordings and all that good stuff, has to depart from the White House in that privileged assistant position because, well, apparently, according to some reports that were supposed to maintain, you know, her anonymity and be off the record and all that stuff, Trump didn't like taking pictures with Tiffany because, A, she's fat, and, B, he couldn't pick her out of a lineup. So, therefore, and Tiffany, by the way, in case anybody forgot, that's his daughter. Anyways, so since that couldn't be done and it was an embarrassment, he had to let her go because she said some hurtful and embarrassing things to him. So, I guess, you know, at least to his sensibilities, I should say. Has anybody heard from Tiffany? I doubt it. I think she tries to keep her head real low. And if I was her, I probably would too. But anyway, let's get on with it. Hey, Hurricane Dorian. So that's bearing down on Florida. That's bearing down on the location of your humble host. That is in its way, on its way, and all that good stuff. Now, of course, what did we have to see before that? Well, you know, it did skip Puerto Rico, much like Trump's last, you know, help from FEMA did. It skipped Puerto Rico, where he's claiming he gave $92 billion, and a small fraction of that actually made it there. And there was still water sitting on the runways, and there's still people with tarp houses from Hurricane Maria. What was that, 2 years ago already? And, hey, at least Dorian had the good sense to not hit Puerto Rico again. Thankfully, because Trump would have been complaining, but you know he canceled his trip to Poland and is going to send Mike Pence in his place, who is claiming, by the way, that the VA was removing Bibles from veterans' rooms while they were staying there under the Obama administration, but he's going to put the Bible back despite the fact that there's no link to reality regarding any of that. You know, that's the guy they're going to send to Poland, so I wonder if the Polish will be telling Mike Pence jokes for the next couple of generations. On with it. So, oh, but Trump did cancel that trip, and you know why he did, right? Because it is bearing down on the east coast of Florida, where he's got a bunch of properties, golf courses, and, you know, bedbug-filled hotels and whatever, and the place he's trying to sell the G7 on, I think, is all right there. So, he canceled his trip and actually went to Twitter to say, oh, this is a big hurricane like nobody's ever seen. As if he's responsible for the hurricane. Well, maybe he is, because he didn't get to nuke it. I mean, that was one of his solutions, right? Right? Now, I sound like a lunatic saying this stuff, but the truth is, if you've been paying attention to the news, you know why I said it. And I'm not the one who comes up with these idiotic ideas. So, anyway, what else is going on? You know, what else should I report? Jim Lavelle, who If you have ever seen the infamous image of Lee Harvey Oswald being shot in the gut by Jack Ruby, the cop which is standing, if you're looking at the photograph and it's normally oriented, the cop who is sort of twisting and sticking his hand in Oswald's belt and trying to pull him and all that, that's Jim Lovell with the white hat. And he is the most prominently displayed white-hatted police officer in that photo. Yeah, he died, and he was 99. Just figured I'd let you guys know that. So what else do we have here in my little one page of notes? There's a new Joker movie coming out, which looks real bad, and Joaquin Phoenix. So end of story there. Let's see. Oh, Joe Biden. Speaking of Jokers, Joe Biden is what? Senile. I have no other accounting. This guy, oh, I'm a gaffe machine. I can't. Listen, if you can't speak straight, you can't even line up your stories properly, why do I want to put you in charge of anything, even being a greeter at Walmart? At least you got to be able to keep track of who's coming in and out. And if you can't do that, go sit home, man. Collect your disability. I mean, seriously, when are we going to get done with putting these old men who are either liars for hire or they just are incompetent because they've been around that long and they don't realize they're incompetent? See, that's the trick about incompetence. In a lot of cases, most people don't realize it. I mean, you got the narcissistic personality disorder that's sitting in the White House right now, and then you got a guy who just gets too old and doesn't realize he's past his prime and past his time. And Biden is pointless, but you know what? They might as well just shove him in there because they're going to put a stalking horse in front of Trump, and he's going to win anyway. And I don't care that you're showing me pictures, by the way. People have sent me stuff. Look, Trump Jr. had a bad rally. You know what? I bet those pictures were not taken at a time when that thing was supposed to be full. Number one. Number two, who cares? He's got years to build it up. He is building up his gravitas among the base, and, you know, he doesn't have the draw that Daddy Trump has yet. But he'll get there. You know, he's got to kill some more animals, be more of a douchebag on TV and radio and whatever, and he'll get there. I mean, maybe he'll make himself look even more legit as a DB by making sure he grows that beard a little thicker, a little bigger. Anyhow, forget that. Joe Biden is senile, as far as I'm concerned. It's only my opinion, and I am not a doctor, but yeah, I don't think the guy's with it anymore. And he's either just in the early stages, or he's further along than we think. And he, you know, they say, oh, look, the rules have changed. No, the rules haven't changed. There's just a jackass that ill-informed people believe. Now, that doesn't mean that you have the right to go out there and be ill-informed and confused, and therefore, that's acceptable. Why don't we just hold a jelly bean counting contest for the next president? Hmm? Be great. Might disqualify some entertaining people, because not real sure Trump understands numbers, considering what he's doing with the trade war and all that. But more on that later. Valerie Harper died. Actress, you know, known for Rhoda. Does anybody care? I don't know. I care about as much as I do about this baseball pitcher who, you know, has opioids in his system and was drinking and doing opioids, and now he's dead, so his million-dollar contract is gone. The pitcher there in L.A., you know, the family is fighting it. Now they're saying, well, we want to know where he got the opioids from. This is going to be an interesting time. Are we going to secondarily blame the people that, you know, utilized the system? Are we going to blame the manufacturers? Are we going to blame the society? Are we going to blame the addicts? Where does the blame train stop? And, you know, what is this going to be, just a flurry of litigiousness with the opioids? I don't know. I don't know, but, you know, big shocker that an athlete is on painkillers. This has been the practice for a long time. Really, the fact is, if he probably wasn't drinking with them, he would have been okay. And I guarantee, you know, they're going, oh, there's fentanyl and all kinds of. There's probably such a cocktail in there. I haven't read the entire toxicology, but the announcements so far and the statement from the family's lawyer, please. This is just going to be another one of those things that disappears and drops away. And, you know, it's sad when a guy dies in his 20s, that's for sure, but. You know, there's a lot of them out there, and they're not all major league millionaires, okay? And they're dying in every state, and it's being pushed on them. And, of course, you know, there's lots of people that benefit from heroin and opioid pills all across the board. But pay no attention to those people paying, you know, million-dollar fines when they're making billions. Cost of doing business, baby. Cost of doing business. Anyway, Let's see. Trump thought Fox News worked for him. You know, I gotta defend Trump here. I thought they did too, but apparently he doesn't think so anymore. And that's supposed to be a story. I don't think so. Okay, so back to it. I still don't understand quite exactly what's going on in Hong Kong, but apparently they're arresting some leaders. The Chinese are getting ready to, you know, drop in some brand new troops over there. They're going to bring fresh troops. That was according to their statement, it sounded to me like. And, well, you know, apparently they're getting a little creative. They're saying that they're going to bring prayer groups on the street because they're banning the protests. And I am still rather confused as to exactly what their goals are. You know, on the one hand, I've got media reports saying they're leaderless. On the other hand, leaders are being detained specifically and disappeared. And I don't know who's telling what about what. However, it's even more confusing when you listen to Trump because he somehow thinks his tariff war has something to do with what's going on in Hong Kong. And that comes from statements on the White House lawn just a little while ago that I watched in confusion. I don't understand. I don't. Oh, no. The China wants to make a deal, so that Hong Kong thing could be worse. How do you have to do you really think you have anything to do? Your ridiculous taxation and continuous, you know, taxation exchange has anything to do with these kids on the street there in Hong Kong? Seriously? Seriously. Okay, somebody get him a, I don't know, Tiddlywinks might be too hard for him. Somebody get him a game of Parcheesi or something to play with and tell him he won a lot and, I don't know, slap the Trump title on it. He'll feel honored. I don't know what to do with the guy anymore. But anyway, the fact that anybody takes him seriously kills me. Okay, so speaking of China, what else we got? Yeah, here we go. U.S. complaints about, oh, yeah, that's the thing. Here in my notes, I'm also his tariff war. These companies that are complaining that they're, you know, getting screwed business wise, yeah, well, they're just badly run, according to Trump. So that's why they're having problems, because they're badly run. He would know something about badly run companies, and he would know something about running things into the ground. He's done it quite a few times, but I don't think he even knows the particulars of the companies that are complaining. He also thinks that he's done, oh, I've given billions and billions of dollars to the farmers. I think he fails to recognize the fact that he's still paying about, oh, I don't know, a fifth of what it was they should be taking in to them, even with his relief, which has not entirely reached every farmer. But that's okay. That's okay because, you know, stick with the plan, right? Right, Trumpets? Stick with the plan. Q will save us all. I've seen it. I'm not going to apologize for being American. Oh, YouTube restored some of these right-wing nuts. And it took Alex Jones about one day to get himself knocked back off of YouTube. But they did that based on appeals, and that's kind of funny. Because, you know, I thought the big war was against them, and meanwhile it's not. They were purging all kinds of things out of their algorithms. And, yeah, it took Alex Jones, what, a day, a little more than a day, I believe the report is, to basically violate the terms of service and the community standards, which I'm sure were completely delineated to an idiot who was, you know, sitting there and contesting his removal and all that stuff. And one day is all it took you. You know, some people can't even get a video uploaded in a day. But I guess when you have, you know, all kinds of money that came in from somewhere else founding your operation and people are still foolishly giving you donations, despite the fact that you have a multi-million dollar operation, yeah, I guess you have the resources to produce videos on the fast track, don't you? Anyway, so that's all of what's happening in general. That's like my lightning round of 15 minutes of nonsense that's actually happening on the globe. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a break. Now, this is an odd break, and I don't know how long it will last, and I don't even know if this show will actually become a full podcast. Why do I say that? Because we're going to go into story time mode here. And what I intend to do is tell you this time a story that's going to be included in the book, but I'm actually having a hard time writing it. So I'm going to see if I can talk it out with you guys and simply tell the story. I'm going to take a break, take a few breaths, probably smoke a cigarette, and, well, you know, and I'll do all of that in less than 5 minutes, I'm sure. But the bottom line is I'm going to do that. and then I'm going to come back from the break, and we're going to go until I get an alert that I've, like, overrun my time or the story is done, or at least this portion of the story is done. Kind of a dark chapter. I'm still stuck in my early childhood in my writing, and I want to get out of it. So maybe you guys can take a listen to this story. Tell me about how it is I could, well, not cut it down, but I have this funny feeling somebody's going to present to me a piece of advice or some sort of insight or input into this story that is going to assist me with my little, not writer's block, but writer's slowdown that I'm experiencing with writing my own life story. Believe it or not, it's not that easy to do. And I've made it from, you know, the obligatory birth area into about the age of 8 or 9, and chronologically. And it's not going to be just entirely, you know, completely streamlined chronological order, but I'm trying to get through the chronological stuff first before I go back and loop things around and try and make the story more interesting to the reader. But the thing is, this particular area has me stuck, and you guys are probably going to figure out why. I'm going to come back, and I'm not even going to do the normal announcements. I'm just going to go straight into the story, so it'll be like this, a podcast. If it's not a podcast, by the way, it'll become a special piece for people on Patreon, and I might make it public on Patreon and even public on the website, but not a regular podcast. I don't know yet. We'll see if I can fill out the whole thing with the story. If not, it'll be out there as a special, and I hope to hear from you guys, and we'll get her done. But in the meantime, I'm just going to blast this through, and you're going to get almost like a audiobook that is done live on the air from the top of my head with just a couple of notes, because I have written out part of this story, but have not figured out exactly how to tell the whole thing. So I'm going to brainstorm with you live and basically attempt to do it verbally on this Friday night Ocelli Effect. So here it comes with, kind of a bonus audiobook coming up. So you got to put up with a commercial earlier, but you'll get a bonus audiobook, and maybe, just maybe, there won't be any more commercials for the rest of this 2-hour peep.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
You might not be thrilled about sponsoring.
The War State brings you exclusive reports about the big changes upcoming in the markets. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Oh,
news, entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
A reminder that this is the Voice of America broadcasting worldwide.
The age of Tangier Swans.
Warning.
Uncle the podcast.
The Ocelli Effect.
Orkin's Policy Radio with Pierce Redman
on Ocelli.com.
We should learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say all power to the people.
And now the most underrated voice in all media.
With Kathy slung limply over his shoulders, he hastily got inside the enclosed porch. Bob slammed the screen door and shut, and dumped her body in a way that reminded me very much of the phrase, like a sack of potatoes onto the floor of that porch. And she just hit the deck in an awkward way, which made me understand immediately that either she was fully unconscious or perhaps she was dead. Now, he said a few things, grunted, groaned a bit, and staggered a touch away from her body, which laid there, and I could tell from a distance had a bit of dampness to it. Some of it seemed to be blood, some of it seemed to be sweat, so at the very least I knew that if she was dead, it wasn't all that long ago that she was still breathing. I couldn't tell from my vantage point if she was breathing or not. That vantage point was perched at the top of the steps. Now, the steps were situated so that there was nothing more than a narrow square hallway which enclosed them. And they went from that porch all the way up to the second floor where I was standing. And they were the only point of exit that made any sense to leave the second floor, and now it was blocked by him. As he staggered away from her, he punched a hole in the wall. And out of rage, because he had staggered into it, he had stumbled into it, really. And I wasn't really paying that much attention. I was trying to take in the entire scene and determine what had happened. Now, the odd thing was that previous to this, I had been lost in something, and quite honestly, I can't remember exactly what it was. It could have been television, or it could have been my own imagination, but either way, I had failed to hear the two of them approaching the house, which was abnormal for me, because normally I could typically understand when somebody was coming. I would hear the car, I would hear the crunch in the driveway from the gravel, I would know when somebody was about ready to be on the property and come near one of the doors downstairs, either the screen door to the enclosed porch or that door which did lead onto it from that second floor staircase I told you about. I would know that ahead of time, and I would also hear the sounds that came along with the car doors shutting, if there was some sort of hostility, if there was something that I needed to be hiding from, if things were cool, if there were extra guests. It was all a matter of me being able to listen very quickly, very alertly. No matter what I was doing, I would stop everything and figure out what was about to come my way, because a lot of unpredictable events could easily unfold. But I do digress, don't I? Still standing at the top of those stairs, it was because I had only taken notice of this noise when that screen door on the enclosed porch was slammed open. And then I went to the steps and saw the scene which I've already described. So, when he punched that hole in the wall, I definitely heard the crumbling of the paint, the cracking sound of the paint, and I don't know what kind of drywall it was. It might have been plaster. It might have been sheetrock that was just old. I'm not sure, but it sort of just crumbled onto the floor, and, you know, I'm not exactly a construction expert, and I certainly wasn't at the age of 8 or 9, which I believe I was 8 at this time. And he was cursing, and he was angry, and he certainly had said a few things to her seemingly lifeless body laying there. But as I was attempting to really just evaluate what was happening, he turned and looked in my direction. Now, again, he's at the bottom of the steps. I'm at the top of the steps. So really, visually, things were probably not as detailed for me as they could have been due to my eyesight, so maybe I was missing part of the scene. But I was very sure of at least a few things. He was making enough noise, and that had nothing to do with my eyes. I could pick up on that with my ears. He was making enough noise. He was breathing heavily. He was seeming to be disoriented just a touch, so I was also trying to determine if this was a drunken situation or if this was maybe some other narcotic that was influencing the action I was seeing in front of me. It's not like the two of them had not seriously harmed one another before, or me or someone else, but this looked a little bit more extreme than what I was accustomed to. Anyway, as he turned his attention to me, I heard him say something to the effect that she was dead, and now it was time to get rid of me. This made my mind run, because still, this is probably something that happened over a very few moments, but there's a lot of things that happen in a very few moments. Now, considering the idea that he was basically telling me that my mother was dead and he had just dumped her body in front of me, and obviously there would have to be other steps taken after that, but in the meantime he needed to get rid of me, this meant that I was now in danger and required something to deal with the situation. So I quickly started to think of what weapons I had access to, and there really wasn't much that would come to mind. I certainly was getting all worked up. I found myself angry and then shaken. And I know I started to shake just a bit, but then something inside of me just sort of said, look, we don't have time for this. And I swear to you, it felt like cold water was poured over my head. And it started to cool the back of my neck, and it ran down my back. Then it ran down the front of me, and it made it all the way down to my toes, all the way through my body, bit by bit, exactly like water feels when it's being poured down you. And I got cold. The cold was good, though, because it actually got me to be still. And I was kind of frozen in place, trying to think, trying to contemplate, how am I going to deal with this? The guy is 6'3". I'm not sure what I can do. Measuring my size, measuring the fact that I had no idea if he had a weapon or not. Didn't seem to, though, considering the fact that he had just barehanded punched a hole in the wall. I was thinking I was dealing with a much larger individual who was certainly intoxicated, and now I was going to have to fight him off or deal with him or evade him. So routes of escape came to mind, and there were no good ones that I could access quickly. I wasn't sure how quickly he was going to make it up the steps. He seemed to be catching his breath, and I could hear that angrily, hastily, inhaled, exhaled, with guttural grunts and groans, which I don't really have the capability to describe to you, but I guarantee you if you heard them, that's what you would call them too. So anyway, I'm standing there. Can't move. But I decided I'm going to stand my ground. He tried to make it up a couple of steps, slowly, sloppily, gripping onto the wall, stumbled, slipped, fell back down, hit the floor, got to his knees fairly quickly, punched a hole in the wall again. This time, though, even though it made the same kind of noises with the crackling paint and the broken wall and the crumbling stuff falling down on the floor, it made all those same noises, and they echoed rather nicely inside of that square box hallway that the stairway was contained in. They echoed and made an odd noise that I don't know how to describe either, but you could definitely tell it was the refracting noise that that came from it resonating and traveling upward. And so did many of the other noises that he was making, etc., at the very bottom landing of these steps. But this time, when his whole hand was punched into the wall, he actually used it to grip part of the wall and stand up, breaking more of a bigger hole in the wall, dragging it down a bit, but actually getting back to his feet. This time, getting even more angry, cursing just a bit and punching a few more holes in the wall. He was enraged. I had no idea why. He also, at this point in time, turned to me and started giving me the idea, and I'll leave some of the words to your imagination, but let's just say that he had an idea in his mind. He was communicating to me that I was laughing at him, and I was not. I'm very sure I was silent. I'm very sure that I probably wasn't even making the sound of breathing all that loud because I was periodically seeming to hold my breath to keep myself steady as I could now feel that coolness that had poured over me with that watery feeling was now turning into heat. And I could feel my muscles tense and I could feel a bit of a rattle, a bit of a shake that was more internal than external, but then again, maybe part of my body was starting to shake a bit, too. Maybe it was the adrenaline. Maybe it was the trip of actual fear, which I wasn't really accustomed to. Usually, I could turn that off, and I could switch away, and I could just deal with the circumstance and crash later and feel the fear, feel the upset, feel the distorted feelings of betrayal that I had encountered many, many times in my life already. But this time, it was all happening in front of me, and even though he wasn't having a good time getting up those steps, I thought to myself, he's going to make it up here. I'm still going to have to stand my ground. So he started making his way back up, and the whole way up, by the way, and there was about, oh, I would say 15 steps at least. He was one at a time and awkwardly and rather sloppily still getting up there, leaning into the wall, leaning into, well, each of the walls that he could reach, gripping and grabbing seemingly onto, I don't know if it was a paint covering or if it was wallpaper or whatever, but you know, part of those walls were pretty tattered and I wasn't fully aware of that, actually, because a lot of it was dark, too. There was a section of that area which was very dark. There was no light directly at the top of the steps or anything like that. So the way that the light coming in from another room was cast into that box made it very hard for me to observe exactly how well he was making it up there. But I got this impression, and he was coming in and out of shadows as he made his way up the steps. I did get a look over his right shoulder and took note that Kathy had not moved. So I was assuming she's dead at this point. Now, before, I had kind of not been sure and had waited to see if maybe she would jump back up and re-engage with whatever was going on. And the closer he got to me, I realized that he was bloody too. He had definitely been wounded in some sort of combat. Now it started to make sense. The two of them had certainly had some sort of fight. And they had gotten a chunk or two out of each other, that's for sure. And there was definitely some blood and there was definitely some sweat. So this didn't happen, well, in a split second. And it was a hot day, which I was just remembering as I could feel myself heat back up. And that cold feeling from before, I was kind of starting to miss it already while I was still trying to make all these different calculations. By this time, he's about halfway up the steps. And the only thing I could think of is, I don't have a weapon. I'm going to have to figure out another way. So now about two-thirds of the way up the steps, still getting there, and he's telling me now, don't run. Whatever you do, don't run, because I'll make it worse if you run. I thought to myself, well, this fool doesn't know. I've got nowhere to run to. What am I going to do? Hide somewhere? Slam a door? He'll kick it in. That makes no sense. I mean, I can slow them down. I could jump out of the second floor window, I guess. But which is better? Face a fight with him, try and elude him, try and get around him, or jump out the window and take my chances? I'm not jumping out the window. No. No more of this. I've already dealt with this before. I've dealt with him before. I've fought him before in different little stupors, and they lasted only a few seconds, and I was able to elude, evade, escape. This time there was going to be no escape. I was just going to have to deal with it. So now he's just about at the top of the steps, and I'm going through all these thoughts. Then I realized that in his left hand was a buck knife, basically. That's what I called it anyway. It was one of those, you know, fake wood grain knives with the metal tips around where the handle were. And it was a folding locking blade knife. And I don't know, I always called it a buck knife. I certainly knew how to use one. I had one at one time, but I didn't have it on me at this moment. I didn't have a razor blade. I'd lost that recently, too. I was actually completely, totally unarmed. Barefoot, actually, in a pair of shorts, no shirt on. Or wait, I was wearing a shirt. I was evaluating my entire body, and then it was funny. I was wearing, actually, a tank top. And I was looking at my own arms and trying to think of different ways to deal with the circumstance, like I said. And then I could just begin to unstick my feet. And I remembered, yeah, I am wearing a shirt. No time to take it off, because I was thinking I should have taken it off. Gives him less of a handle, less of a way to grab a hold of me in case I can elude or slip by. You know, can't be grabbed by the shirt and pulled back. Also a good reason to cut your hair if you're used to fighting and you got to deal with people which are much larger than you. You don't want to be caught by the hair. But anyway, all of these things running through my mind, and he's just about there, just about at the top. Now, at this point, I took a step back, and I did put myself up against the wall. There was a wall just behind me. I mean, like two steps from the top of the steps at most. And these were my steps. I was a kid, and, well, you know, my steps are a little smaller than the 6'3" guy who's coming at me. And I'm thinking, one way or another, I'm sending him back down those steps. And one way or another, he's either getting busted bones or he's dying today. I can't do this anymore. So the buck knife, which I do note is in his left hand, and an empty right hand, which he's balancing himself on, he gets to the top of the steps. And lunges at me. The buck knife missed. I'm not exactly sure why, but it was meant, I think, for my face, and it went right by me and into the wall. At this point, he had a hold of me on the other side with his other hand. I think I was actually being pressed up against the wall because he was balancing and trying to pull back the blade. What I did at this time, and I don't know where the idea came from. Again, it just occurred to me as the action was unfolding and I was trying to maintain calm and I wasn't going to make a sound because I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of a screech, a cry, a plea. I took a step onto his leg, picked up my right foot because my left foot was perched on his knee. Kind of in between his leg and his hip, I guess. I mean, in between his knee and his hip, I guess. But my right foot I put up, pushed on his chest, put my back up against the wall, and shoved as hard as I could with everything I had. I don't know where the blade went at that point, and he definitely had a hold of part of my shoulder. So, although this will sound strange again, here we are in midair. I've knocked him off balance. He's going backwards. He's definitely going back down those steps. But he's got a hold of me, so I'm about to go with him. Oddly, when his head tipped back, he seemed to let go. I was still in midair. I was going with the momentum of the thing, but not sure exactly how. Can't describe it. Happened very quickly. It seemed like my gut was slammed on the very top step. And I was able to claw at the rug and stop myself from going down. He did not, however. So, I vaguely, because I was still too busy clawing at that rug, trying not to go down the steps with him, vaguely understood that he had rolled all the way down there and it wasn't a smooth roll. Definitely was a problem for him. And he definitely made more of those guttural noises on his way down, and he slammed all the way back down to that bottom landing, only a few feet, really, from where Kathy was laying. At this point, he started moaning and making a noise that I gotta say I was fairly familiar with. But I took inventory of myself. I wasn't quite exactly sure how I didn't fly down those steps. I thought I was going with him. It felt like he had a hold of me. But again, I think when his head tipped back, he must have just instinctively let go. I also believe the knife made it about halfway down, but I couldn't see it. I had no idea where the knife went. He was face down, though. At least his body was face down. His head was turned, say, to his left, and I could see that much. I could finally breathe now. He was kind of whimpering, kind of making guttural noises, and there was also, like I said, this other sound I recognized, and, you know, it's a rattling noise. It's something like when the lung is broken. I know what the noise sounds like. I don't know how to describe it verbally, but I assure you, that's the noise I was hearing. It's like as if someone is inhaling and exhaling, but maybe there's a bunch of sawdust and broken glass in it. So they moan just a bit when they do it, and it's an unearthly kind of moan. It's not the thing that comes out in their regular voice. It's just a totally different sound, and it reminds me a bit of a rattle. Like I said, I've heard it before, and, well, usually it was from somebody who was about to die. Collecting myself on the top of the steps, I said, I got to finish this. I did remember at this point, though, that maybe I had access to my father's toolbox. So I went there, and I got the ball-peen hammer. And strategized in my mind. All I got to do is put this to his skull one time, good, and that'll finish everything. So I took the hammer and I walked about halfway down the steps and he started making a little more noise. And I was wondering if he was going to get back up and I was wondering if I was going to lose my opportunity to go ahead and finish this whole thing. I couldn't quite take the time anymore to see what was happening with Kathy. She hadn't moved. Pointless. Pointless to even bother with that. But I got to finish this. Because if he gets back up, now it is going to be bad. And even though I knew he was in a vulnerable position, he was face down, he was definitely injured. I could hear, I could see the injury. I knew that even with the adrenaline pumping and everything else, he wasn't getting back up. Couldn't get back to his knees, didn't even try for a bit. I knew that I needed to finish this. So I made it down, like I said, about halfway. Then I made it about three quarters of the way down, and I got a better look. She was in an awkward position. I didn't realize that before, but one of her legs was certainly in an awkward position, and again, I still just had no other choice but to conclude that she was dead. And he needed to be. So I took all the way down to the bottom step, which he was only maybe a foot and a half from, where his arm was kind of curled up and pressed up against the front of that bottom step. And I knew I could swing the ball-peen hammer and crack his skull probably with one, two shots. And hey, if it took two, three, four, it didn't really matter. I was going to get it done. Something in me made another calculation, though. And that was that no matter how this turns out, no matter how right I am to do this, they're probably going to lock me up if I do. I'll never see the light of day again. Now, maybe that would be better. I mean, you know, three hots and a cot and all that kind of stuff that I've heard from a lot of people. And certainly I'd seen people that had gotten out of penitentiary after some years and all that. Some of them went in young and came out a bit old. Some of them went in real young and came out just a little older. You know, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing to start again and just be an ex-con like most of the people that I was used to dealing with. Maybe. But something told me that this guy is just simply not worth it. And also, he might still be just dangerous enough that if I don't absolutely finish the job with the hammer to the back of his head or the side of his head or many spots on his head, maybe his head and neck and body, and who knows, maybe I wouldn't have stopped swinging because that's how angry I was now. But he wasn't worth it. And besides that, there's a lot to deal with here. Maybe the cops are going to think I killed her, too. I don't want to go down for two murders. I can't justify it all. And if he survives, imagine the story he'll tell. Will anybody even believe me? I mean, I thought back to some of the other people that I had known, some of the other adults who had taken interest in me, and I'm sure that they would have been mighty proud of the fact that I dealt with this guy with a kick, with a push, and sent him down the steps crashing and didn't kill myself in the process. I'm sure that that would have been a valid, unique, wonderful, laudable celebration. I might have even gotten extra money and a birthday present, even though it wasn't my birthday, from some people. But he just wasn't worth it. So today would not be the day that I was going to kill somebody. I decided I couldn't. Now what? Well, I can't stay here because I'm not going to just sit here with these two bodies and waiting for somebody to discover it and freak out on me and wonder why I didn't go call the cops, because I'm certainly not going to call the cops. And I'm certainly not going to call anybody else because, man, I don't even want to untangle this mess. That was my thought sitting there on the second step from the bottom. So, I gave him a kick in his back. Took the hammer back up the steps and put it back in the box. Now what am I going to do? Well, maybe I should wipe my prints off of the hammer. Nah, no worries. It wasn't actually a weapon today. Well, I don't want to go back through the maze of blood and everything else down there. As a matter of fact, I might end up tracking some of that blood around. And I don't want it on the bottom of my feet, and I don't know how to escape it, and I'll probably step in it. I can't see well, so I can't go out that doorway, and I'm not jumping out a window. What am I going to do? Well, there was that enclosed porch, remember, right? So there was a couple of windows that led to a roof. Now, that roof wasn't the roof of the house. It was the roof of just the enclosed porch. But you know what? Had shingles and tar paper on it and stuff. And you know what was right directly in front of that? A pine tree. In my mind, now I had hidden on that roof before. Didn't think of it as anything other than a hiding space because I thought it would be way too dangerous to try and shimmy my way down that tree. I wasn't a tree climber as a kid. I was actually pretty bad with balance. And, you know, it helps if you have really good eyesight to climb trees, especially when they're all kind of intermingled and messy like pine trees are. So that was a little bit too dangerous of a thing to do normally, and I could sit on that roof, and in fact, I could hide in between the two windows that roof had just above it. And I could sit there, and people would think I disappeared from the house, and I didn't leave. I was just sitting outside. Of course, passersby probably wondered on the rare occasion that somebody bothered to notice me why a kid was sitting on the roof of a house. But then again, I was sitting on the roof of my enclosed porch where I lived, so what was the big deal? I don't know. 1970s, what are you going to do? Or actually, maybe it was just about 1980. Either way, wasn't paying attention to the calendar at this point. But thing is, I could probably make it from that rooftop to the pine tree to the ground. Avoid stepping through the bloody mess, the murder scene and other scene, whatever the hell else was going on between the two of them. I wouldn't even have to step through it or be contaminated by it or get blood on me or nothing else. Now, I did realize before I went outside that I did have some blood on me. I had been cut somewhere, wasn't sure, and didn't really care at the moment, but I was already bleeding, and I wasn't going to add any more blood to anything else. So I took off that tank top shirt I was telling you about before and decided to clean up the blood with that. It did stop pretty quickly, so I couldn't have been cut too bad. And, well, guess we'll have to go on out the window and make our way to the pine tree. Now, it's a good thing sometimes that there are temporary screens in windows. And this was the case for me. I could easily kick it out. The thing went and slid right into the yard. I didn't really care very much. Normally, I would carefully remove that and replace it so nobody would know any better. But this day, I figured, what the hell, we'll just kick the screen out. So I did. And very, very carefully made my way to where the pine tree was, hung on a branch that I could catch, which, by the way, I thought was a little more sturdy than it was, but it certainly slowed my descent to the ground, where I landed and abruptly hit both of my knees pretty hard on a root. But I was out of the house. I was out of the way. Now there was a big open window up there, and there was nothing I could do about it because I sure as hell wasn't climbing back up that tree. Either way, now I had to figure out where to go next. Maybe I should look inside of the porch and see what the scene looks like from the outside. There's a little more light outside. There still was some light in the sky. Not a lot, but it was that time of day when, you know, the colors get a little prettier, and it's red and orange and this kind of thing, and it's not just bright blue skies. You know the darkness is coming, but still a little more light outside than there was inside. Took a look. The scene looked pretty much like I thought it would. Now what? Well, there was a shed, which wasn't actually ours, but was on the property. It really belonged to the guy who was downstairs and actually occupied the downstairs area, but he had recently died, so I didn't think anybody would mind if I busted open the flimsy, flimsy metal shed. I went in there and I sat down and I was taking in the entire situation and thinking to myself what I just survived and how strange it was and how difficult it was and what was going to happen next. I wasn't sure, but I didn't want any part of it. Pulled closed these little sliding metal doors, and it was dark and cool, and you know what? It smelled like dirt at first, and I was comforted by that. Dirt and a hint of gasoline. So I found a good spot to lean up against with the very little bit of light that was coming through the cracks in this metal thing. The fact is that there was a couple of breaches in the roof of it, so a little bit of light came from the sky somehow into it. And I was using that little bit of light to find me a nice place on the wall so I could lean up against it. And I sat on the ground and took myself quite a few deep breaths of that gasoline-smelling dirt. And I fell asleep. Now you might wonder what happened the next day. You might wonder what happened the next 10 minutes. Hell, I'm not even sure what happened for the next few hours, because the next morning is when I decided to slip open that metal door again, because there were bright lights coming through the ceiling on this place now, and it was clear that the sun had come up. So I had slept all night in this tin shed, sucking up the smell of dirt and gasoline, doing what I had to do. Funny thing was, I decided to go and approach the house. Now, the car was still in the driveway, that car that I didn't hear pull up the first time, and that was really unusual to begin with. The fact that I didn't hear any of the ruckus or what actually occurred before that door slammed open, car was still sitting there. And I took note that there was a bit of blood smeared by each of the door handles. And I took note that there was drops of what I thought could have been blood right there, kind of covered in the morning dew, almost reactivated on a piece of flagstone on my way over to that front door, that front porch door. I walked in there, and the bottom door was shut, and there were no bodies. None at all. Wasn't any blood on the floor either. I was a bit confused, but I figured, let me see what's going on. And I opened that door to that stairway I was telling you about before. Now, there was definitely all kinds of bits and pieces of the wall laying around. And that had not been repaired at all. And I could see now that there was actually four good holes punched into pieces of the wall. I could see all that, and I could see that part of the steps seemed to have been damaged from the angle I was looking at them at, but didn't notice that before. And the echo of me just stepping into that bottom landing echoed in that hallway still. Guess the holes didn't change it much. Walked up the steps. Noted that there was a few closed rooms and there was no noise at all. So I go in and I sit down and I turn on the black and white TV and flip it around a little bit to see if there's anything tolerable to watch. And I can still smell that dirt and gasoline in my nostrils. And I started watching TV. I don't even remember what it was, because believe me, I had 100 other thoughts on my mind. But it wasn't too long after that was going on that Bob walked in the room and asked me if I knew what happened last night. I told him I don't know. Apparently, nobody except me remembered what happened the night before.
Uncle, somebody told me the other day that martial law is coming where you get thrown into the FEMA camp. Should I be scared or not?
No.
It might be true.
Well.
Could be.
Could be, but I don't think so.
I'll bet I know who would know. Somebody who does a show on the Ocelli.com radio network.
Somebody would know. Charlie.com would know. Will know.
Better listen to it.
Better listen to him. And he knows what he's talking about.
Ocelli.com.
Thank you. entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
No talking at the dinner table.
You're on your period?
You I've said period. Not no period.
What's that?
Understand about
it. You just told him not to talk while he's eating.
Wait a minute. I'm talking to a man here. Man talk. Not women talk.
While you're eating? You're going to shout.
See, that's exactly my point. Exactly my point.
Now wait. We're not supposed to talk while we eat. Is that the rule?
That's the rule now.
Okay, we can't talk while we eat.
All right, everybody. Here, Uncle.
He can't talk.
No talking while eating. Uncle's rule.
We have to be quiet.
But this is the time that we're together.
It doesn't matter. When we finish eating, then you can talk.
No, they don't.
She can talk because she stopped. No, wait a minute. She's eating again. That means you can't talk to her.
I'm done. I can talk.
Well, nobody else is listening. Cause
there's a song called
Mirror.
Yeah.
What would I do? Revelation through conversation. In a radio show / podcast. You want the good news? Listen to the O'Celli Effect. Chuck O'Celli is the most underrated voice in all media. News, education, and entertainment. The Daily Bread from O'Celli.com. Go there. Save yourself from ignorance. O'Celli.com. But we all agreed to put O'Celli.com on and listen to the O'Celli Effect. Revelation through conversation. O'Celli.com.
O'Celli Effect calls in to the O'Celli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JP Sicilian and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
O'Celli.com.
doing a few pre-recorded things here while I'm trying to get some things together. Don't know what's going to happen to the rest of the hour, but this is Cirrus Minor, You're Kidding Me, on Ocelli.com.
From my grandma, I got straight D's. I had a chance to go to college, but I smoked a doobie. If I never smoked that cigar weed, I'd be doing well. You believe that shit within your dime as a G-double-L. Well,
goddamn time at wait they wake up. Hell, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jolden Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. For more pods with Jolden and Chuck, search ocelli.com. along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck O'Celli on O'Celli.com. Thanks for listening.
entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
Go ahead, Colin.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claims, Oswald girlfriends, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Good always overpowered the evils of all man's sin. But in time, nations grew weak and our cities felt love while evil stood strong.
awaits you now, many, many lifetimes later, destroyed, beaten down. Only the corpse rebels, rashes of trash, blood stains, let it be written, that those who have the youth have the future, So come now, children of the beast, be strong, and shout at the devil,
I'm
Entertainment, and more. You will learn something, children's. Ocelli.com.
ends that for a Friars Day night. Coming up next, the Age of Transitions here on Ocelli.com. And you know what that's followed by? Uncle the Broadcast. So stick around. It ought to be a lot of fun.